Back to paper 118, section 8, hold single column, page 1301. Like I mentioned at the end of a group last week, this section has the three paragraphs in it that John is now using for the closing on the new series of videos that we're working on. And not only that, it's just really kind of fascinating from a synchronicity supremacy point of view that the video that we're just about ready to post, the next video that we're, that's just about ready to go up, which is paper 99, sections 5 and 6, is spot on, in sync with this section. So we're just perfectly coordinated here that you may find it really helpful to actually go back and study that paper 99, section 5 and 6, the discussion we had about that, because basically this section and the heavy meat of this section picks up right where we left off with that that discussion that night way back in June of 2009. In many ways, there's a. This is a very significant section. There's one of the key points that we've touched upon over and over is brought to a pretty definitive head in this section. So we'll wanna spend some time reflecting on that. It goes definitively beyond you as an individual and your growth. It touches upon that. That very definitive, additional differential of the fifth epical revelation relative to the fourth, say, about bringing in civilization. That whole issue of what their information they're trying to give us in hopes that we can take up as soon as possible the challenge to go beyond ourselves and consider the imminent needs of civilization. Now, first thing we want to note, you remember how it ended in that previous section? I pointed out they had pairs of ideas. They had consecration to the purposes of the universe, and they had cosmic wisdom attainment, and that, you know, in that order, father likeness, mother likeness, and then they did it again, will, the will, and the way of God, mm-hmm. Father likeness, mother likeness. So it got me thinking that. Might be nice to just introduce a new little mini writing that I put together for everyone. You can use this as a real touchstone going forward. To it puts down the basics of. What we've been bringing up over and over, this recognition of the differential between God functioning as Father and God functioning as Mother, so that you can reflect on this differential and get yourself more attuned to when they're alluding to that differential, because like we pointed out. For instance, right there, lots and lots and lots of times, they don't label the two. You have to be able to recognize what's father likeness and what's mother likeness. You know, a lot of times you can be very suspicious. There might be something afoot if you see two things and you notice that they use the term God instead of father. You know, that might be very purposeful, you know, so that it's a more general term relating to, you know, either God as father or God as mother. So you see what I, you know, you can probably recognize what I did here. You take those first two sentences of paper one, and you tweak them just ever so slightly so they can serve in direct parallel with a, you know, a coordinated pair of sentences. You know, so you have the universal Father is the God of all creation. The first source and center, the initiator, we're adding that little parenthetical, the initiator of all things and beings. And like we pointed out, there's really nothing more definitive about getting, you know, a direct understanding of what the Father's relationship is to creation than that simple expression, the initiator. He initiates creation. First, think of him as a creator, then as a controller, and lastly as an infinite upholder. Made one little tweak there. Him, you know, place the word God by him so I can create a parallel construct with her. And we've talked about that a lot. Yeah, that's why it's lastly, you know, why it has it in that order. So just take that same spirit and create a parallel. The universal mother is also the God of all creation. The womb, the focalizer, and the upholder of all things and beings. So you've got that nice, you know, initiator on the one hand, the womb, the focalizer, and the upholder on the other hand. First, think of her as a totality attitude, then as a coordinate actor, and lastly, as a cosmic over-controller. You know, and you know, in the same order, obviously, those three, but emphasizing the nature of that sequence of three in a slightly different way. Womb, totality attitude, you know, obviously go together, etc. Okay, so you know, those, if you just reflect on those basic characteristics, you know, the differential between the two, it'll help you to recognize when they're pointing to this. Yeah, you got one thing here? Yep.
Yeah, it's what you said earlier, and I don't know if I can use those for what you just said now with the will and the way. Can you speak more on that? Is that part of what we're talking about now?
We talked about that a little bit back when they kind of brought that up. You know, the upholder is literally the way. You know, a way is literal. It's not figurative. It's literal. You have to have something to stand on for there to be a way to walk on. You know, she is that way. You know, the upholder. You know, there's a will that's transcendent that creates a way that's imminent. The way is obviously within. She's, you know, she is God within. He initiates the way, but he isn't the way, literally. He just initiates the way. She literally is the way. Yeah. You know, whenever they allude to that, you know, like, you know, when, you know, if it's, I am the way, the truth, and the life. You know, think about how he is pointing to a relationship to God as immanence as opposed to God as transcendence. You know, he's pointing to what's going on within. I mean, there's a number of things. You know, like just if you want to think about the spirit of truth, if you want to think about that in relationship to that statement of I am the way. You know, literally, how does the spirit of truth get poured out upon all flesh? Michael can't do that. You know, he isn't ubiquitous. She is. You know, that spirit ministry is poured out upon her spirit substrate. She's literally the way that the spirit of truth gets to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just, you know, begin to, you know, to just reflect on that difference. Yeah.
I was thinking of Jesus. I don't know if it's in the Ranch Book. I know it's in the New Testament Bible. The kingdom of God is within you. It's a common phrase. Within you.
Right.
You know, that's the immanence. That's ubiquity.
Right. And of course, you know, we know there's a literalness, you know, the adjuster is within the mind, not next to, not above. And we're going to actually touch upon that some. You know, that's when things are going to come up here, is that relationship between the adjuster and the mother. Yeah.
Can you explain briefly what about the focalizer
part of this? All right. You know, or the coordinate actor. I mean, for instance, the Father initiates you, and you recognize that. You make that initial consecration of your will to His will. You know, you recognize that He has given you the potential to be, you know, to begin that journey as a son of the Father, son of Him. So you take a hold of that initial consecration of will. And now you've got the process of bringing your mind up to the level that can actualize that will consecration. Just because you consecrate your mind doesn't magically fall into place. You have to set about wrapping your mind around that consecration of will. You know, really thinking, you know, I keep using that expression, wrapping your mind around, because think of focalizer. The mother is going to help you with that process of focalizing upon that consecration of will. Wrapping your mind around. Or, you know, even if you want to think of it in the psychic circles. See, it's coming, you know, it's becoming focalized. Your mind is becoming focalized as you move inward in those circles. The mother is what's, is what you're coordinating with to have an experience of focalizing like that. Father initiated the process, but she's actually coordinating that process of bringing you in into alignment, bringing yourself, helping you bring yourself into alignment with that consecration of will.
And all the other people,
yeah, and then, you know, connecting you together, you know, that whole coordinate actor, you know, to actually coordinate between two individuals that have been initiated. So just all those things like that. Begin to reflect on that.
Wouldn't that consecration to doing the Father's will involve a lot of decisions?
We're gonna talk about that, but I want to go into that. You know, this is not the main topic of tonight. This is just, it's a great opportunity to just lay this out for you. You know, this is for you to go forward from now on as a little touchstone to reflect on. You know, and you can come back to it over and over and over again.
Can I just ask one question?
Yep.
Does the Universal Mother come from the Spirit, from the direct expressions? You know, the birth source, spirit?
No.
Okay, which one is she from?
Well, that's getting into the... But it's something that we'll bring up when we get back to the forward and we get to really talking about total deity, and we'll be using, you know, your great visualization, where you noticed, you know, that I paralleled the one, you know, then two, then lastly. You know, I used the sequence there. Mm-hmm. You know, totality, attitude, then coordinate actor, and lastly, cosmic overcontroller. Just like we use the infinite eternal ellipse to understand that sequence of three things for the God the Father, we're going to use that depiction of total deity to see that sequence.
Well, where is she on it, though?
Father is centered at the top and the mother is centered at the bottom. Yeah. You good? Yeah, and you're...
It's the Supreme, right?
No. We don't go off on that whole, that's a whole, open up a whole new discussion. But okay, what we want to focus on is one thing, the title of this section, okay, has two words in it, you know, control and over control. Find those two words on here. Where do they lie? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same order as what we pointed out at the end of the previous paragraph there. Okay? Father, mother. Control and over control. Okay? So what they're going to play off of that. And they're going to give you maybe a little bit different twist on it than you're initially maybe thinking. Okay? But to begin to reflect on that, control and over control. Maybe just let me give you one little simple example. Or really, we often point out that sentence about the Most High Observer as the over-controller of political evolution. Remember that sentence in the Jesus Papers? Okay. As the Most High Observer, okay, he's an over-controller. He's in a mother-like mode.
Looking over things.
Okay? Over-controller. Okay? If he declares himself to be Most High Regent, okay, now he's in a father mode. He's not going to over-control as regent. He's going to control. Okay? He has absolute authority, remember, when he assumes regency. So there's a simple example. See, one being, okay, you know, and if they're talking about him functioning in that more, mother-like mode, they talk about him as an over-controller. But he may, you know, go into a very father-like, interventionary control mode. Okay, so there's a simple example of how, you know, you can be suspecting that just because, you know, they purposely said controller, you know, and then the other one they purposely said over controller, okay? Because they want to use that distinction. And it's especially, you know, here you want to especially think of it when you're in a personality mode. We're not talking about a non-personal, material over-controller sort of a mode. This is more the mind and spirit over-controller mode. Okay? All right, let's see. Okay, so I think that'll do her. Let's read that first paragraph.
Okay. Control and over-control. In the time-space creations, free will is hedged about with restraints, with limitations. Material life evolution is first mechanical, then mind-activated, and after the bestowal of personality, it may become spirit-directed. Organic evolution on the inhabited worlds is physically limited by the potentials of the original physical life implantations of the life carriers.
Okay. Mortal. So the very one little thing I want you to notice there before we go on to the next one. Notice carefully how they stated it. And after the bestowal of personality, it may. May is very important. Mm-hmm. You don't want to miss that word. Mm-hmm. It changes everything if you skip that word. It may become spirit-directed. Okay? We've talked about this before. When we're talking about personality, spirit pattern, It's given to you as a potential to purpose spirit, and that spirit can then direct, and the spirit dominates mind. Okay, but it's not like the moment that that you're encircuited in the Father's personality circuit, all the direction is actualized, and everything is perfect. Okay. It starts out almost totally potential, you know, and that's that must be recognized. That may is very important, and and in this context, they're already foreshadowing what they're going to point out just coming up. We know that it's that even if you start to to really work on that actualization of that purposing. This is a long, slow process from here to eternity. You know, in this brief life, it's not going to go very far. Okay, so you do not want to start with the initial assumption. Well, my mind is perfectly directed by spirit because I willed it. It just doesn't happen automagically like that. And then the other little thing, and I want to point out right here before we get into it, it's very important to appreciate right away the main way they're going to be using the word spirit in what we're about to read. When they're talking about spirit directed here, it's you could assume a number of things just from there, but you'll see right away in the next paragraph they begin to clarify that. So let me just put that up front so that you can appreciate it. We're very much going to be focusing on true spirit. Let's just say it that way to start with here. Not just any old spirit energy, interplay here, but true spirit. And you'll see what I mean by that as we get into the next section. Take this, the use of the word spirit here in a little bit more definitive fashion than you do sometimes when they're talking about spirit.
So are you saying that we don't will to have spirit in us? Automagic a couple seconds ago?
Well, no, I mean, it's one thing to have a relationship with spirit. It's another thing for it to be well directed.
Okay.
To assume that the moment that you bring in spirit, it's automatically well directed, that's the third principle of the Lucifer Manifesto. That there's nothing difficult about that. There's no further consecration involved. That it just happens automatically on its own, that it's all just well directed and everything is going to go fine after that. If anything, it's just the opposite, and that's one of the points of this section we're going to be talking about. We've brought that up many times, and that's kind of where we're building to in this section, to really take on that issue in a direct way, the danger we always talk about. Okay.
Mortal man is a machine, a living mechanism. His roots are truly in the physical world of energy. Many human reactions are mechanical in nature. Much of life is machine-like. But man, a mechanism, is much more than a machine. He is mind-endowed and spirit-indwelt. And though he can never, throughout his material life, escape the chemical and electrical mechanics of his existence, he can increasingly learn how to subordinate this physical life machine to the directive wisdom of experience by the process of consecrating the human mind to the execution of the spiritual urges of the indwelling thought adjuster.
Okay, three little points there. The first one, you see them just stating it very directly. Many human reactions, okay, notice they purposely put human, not animal reactions, okay, many human reactions are mechanical in nature. Much, not some, much of life is machine-like.
God bless you.
Okay? You've heard me stress this. Here they are saying it very directly. This is an important first step. That's why it's right up at the very beginning of this discussion. Humility. The first step is humility. To recognize just how far removed you are from the sophistry of the third principle of the Lucifer Manifesto. I mean, not only are you not innately divine, you're mostly machine-like, okay, in your reactions. Okay, and what, we've tried to point this out, with two words in contrast, okay? These machine-like human reactions, that's your temperament. Okay? How far removed is that from personality? Mm-hmm. Okay? You want to put as much distance between those two words as your mind can conceive. And then when you mature a little bit, you'll put them even further apart. And when you grow a little bit more, you'll put them even further apart. Okay? This distinction is vital. Okay? To not call the mechanism that the Father initiated personal. Okay? It's just a machine. Okay? And the more you can get personality up above the temperament of that machine, the more potential for an internal overcontrol there is. You know, from this vantage height, I can overcontrol that much. From a higher vantage point, I can overcontrol this much. Okay? You see, you want to embrace the bifurcation, okay, of the infinitude into mm-hmm. the unqualified absolute and the deity absolute. You want to get those very definitively separated. Okay? The machine from the person.
So is temperament different from the self? Because I thought we align the self.
The self is machine-like. The self has a temperament.
The self
is mostly material, and much of it is machine-like in character.
But I thought we were aligning it, not necessarily separating.
How you start. The self begins almost totally machine-like.
Self-hood.
The extent to which that you've recognized personal responsibility and you've taken control of the self, you've consecrated this directing spirit to godlikeness, and then you've imposed it upon the mindful self, more and more you can lift that self up out of that machine-like starting point.
Okay. So it is getting aligned eventually and absorbed into it.
But there's almost nothing about that alignment that's automatic.
Yeah.
Only the absolute minimum so that you have a possibility of a future is given to you to start with.
In the beginning, it's very
subtle. Right. That's when many human reactions are,
That's why they choose not what you are today. Because you're
becoming.
Because you're not much today. You're mostly a machine today. And this mind endowed and spirit indwelt. Okay. Mind and spirit. Who is the upholder of the harmony in the mind and spirit of the cosmos? The Universal Mother, okay? Womb of mind, upholder. And harmony, okay? And so right away, when you see that, you should be thinking along those lines. And then notice how this ends. Learn how to subordinate this physical life machine to the directive wisdom, the mother word, of experience by the process of consecrating the human mind to the execution of the spiritual urges of the indwelling thought adjuster. This is the second consecration we've pointed out. There are two consecrations. The consecration to the initiator, so that you're initiated. I consecrate my will to the perfect will of God the Father. Here's the follow-on consecration. It isn't done when you start. All you've done is start. You haven't taken one step yet. You've created a starting point. You've initiated. You are. Okay? One must do something, though, as well as be something. And what you want to do is consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. That harmony they were just pointing to, that harmony that's upheld in mind and spirit. Okay, and in particular, we're focusing on, the mind to that spirit. And see, this all, heading towards the thought adjuster. Okay, we're thinking about this hierarchy of the cosmic mother here. Your first destiny point, is fusion. Getting up these these steps of the cosmos. Okay, so you're consecrating your mind to the harmony that's upheld by the mother. First at this level, then at this level, then at this level. So you're moving vertically up in this this consecration of mind toward this harmonious spirit, heading towards the thought adjuster, you know, that fragment out of the infinite upholder. And this is where, again, you're reminding yourself what you're actually heading towards is that experiential acquirement of that adjuster that's wrapped around the existential core, the father fragment. The adjuster is a point of harmony. So think about how complete the system is now. You have this whole hierarchy of harmony upheld by the mother with a condensation, a literal substance condensation of that harmony, a point of harmony that's within your mind that you can chart a course towards. It's unlike initially, the mother seems kind of fuzzy, but you put this rock solid point of that harmony in your mind, and it illuminates the harmony that, of the seventh, sixth, fifth, fourth, etc. psychic circles proceeding towards it, so that the way is clear, that I'm going to consecrate my mind to this ever focalizing harmony, which reaches that point of harmony that's been in place within my mind, the thought adjuster.
Just you were saying the thought adjuster is the focal point, a spark. Remind me of a snowflake. Every single snowflake has a moat at the center around which the crystal grows, and every crystal is unique. So that's a nice image.
Yeah, that's a cool way to think of it. Yeah, I mean, that's... and what you're immediately experiencing is not that invisible speck in the center. It's the snowflake. It's the same way with the adjuster.
You're probably going to regret bringing this up, but I've often wondered why you don't draw the analogy more obviously of sperms and eggs, because it's so obvious to me.
No, I mean it is definitely there. I mean, you got to recognize that prior to fusion, your soul, what the universe really sees as anything of any potential reality, that's an unfertilized egg. Okay, point of fusion, is the point at which that egg is fertilized. But, right, it's conceived. Yeah. That's the spirit conception point, literally. Not just a neat metaphor. That is literally the spirit conception point. Just exactly like there was a material conception point, in complete parallel, because there's a first source and center of all things and beings. Everything follows the same pattern.
It does.
It's not hard to figure out. If you know anything about matter, you know something about spirit. If you know anything about spirit, you know something about matter. Okay, because it all has one source.
Are you implying there's a fusion in the egg?
Right. I mean, it's completely parallel. Everything about it. Okay. So like this, when we're talking about spiritual urges and the spirit directed, we're very much talking about a vertical relationship with spirit. Moving definitively up this hierarchy of spirit towards that spirit point of the adjuster. Okay? That's what they mean, like I was saying, you can think of it as, true spirit. But now remember, spirit is also just an energy. You could have a horizontal relationship with spirit. Hmm. And like we're going to point out, and we've mentioned that before, that's where the problem can lie with spirit. The fact that spirit isn't automatically, that you can, the only, a vertical channel The fact that you can also go sideways, okay? And the farther you get to the side, the farther you're away from the God nucleus, the core, your anchor point within. And we've mentioned this before. Okay, this is the problem. So, but what, see, what, so what, you'll see that they, you know, they often, are going forward, they're going to use the word spirit. And you've got to, you know, the unwritten adjectives in front of that word is, we're talking about in this true vertical line that the spirit is these attributes. If you take these things out of that context and say, well, just any old spirit, like unbridled zeal is what they're talking about here. Okay, you're going to completely misunderstand what they're saying. Okay, the vertical and horizontal distinction here is very important. Okay. So what else do they have here for us?
The spirit liberates and the mechanism limits the function of, limits the function of will. Let me say that again. The spirit liberates and the mechanism limits the function of will. Imperfect choice, uncontrolled by mechanism, unidentified with spirit, is dangerous and unstable. Mechanical dominance ensures stability at the expense of progress. Spirit alliance liberates choice from the physical level and at the same time assures the divine stability produced by augmented universe insight and increased cosmic comprehension.
Okay. So you see what I mean about the use of the word spirit there?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a very positive invocation there. You know, you've got, you know, we all... you know that that's not automatic. If it was automatic, the word danger wouldn't be in the sentence. Okay? Okay, so, you know, this vertical relation, or, yeah, vertical relationship with spirit liberates. The mechanism limits the function of will. Okay, here you see the word control. You know, uncontrolled by mechanism. What they're pointing out here, see, that's the, you know, we have this control and over control that they wanted us to have, you know, in mind before we started reading here. The Father initiates you, you know, in a material context of things. You know, you're a you know, your body's a thing, and the things around you are things. You know, and there's the sevenfold controllers, you know, are reaching down to engage those things. You know, God the Father as the universal controller, see, is at the top of that control. Okay? That's what they're pointing to here, you know, in terms of the control being Father-likeness. Literally the material. We're not bringing in the Father functioning in some personal mode, intervening in the sequence of events or anything like that. We're talking about him as the universal controller. Remember on the levels, functional levels of total deity, the evolutional level, you know, where you and I are as evolutional beings. There's two facets of deity that are functioning on that level. One is the sevenfold. Creature-identified deity, you know, it's reaching down to engage us. The other one is the universal controller. In this mode, what we're reading about here, okay, in the time-space creations, free will is hedged about with restraints and limitations by the Father as the universal controller and his downstepped expressions in the sevenfold controllers. Okay, so that's how the Father is entering into this picture. And you know what we need to do here. We need to move upward, transcending those initial restraints so that we let go of some of that, the Father's imposition of control. But if it's not going to be dangerous and unstable, you know, like they're pointing out here, you better manifest some over-control, mind or spirit over-control within, you know, specifically spirit over-control of your mind within. Over-control. See, mother-like. See, what you're letting go of this initial father-like you know, hedging about, you know, for safety's sake, and replacing it with mother-like identification. Remember what they said, you know, throughout your whole local universe career, this is, you know, the primary thing that you're doing is acquiring that mother-likeness to deal with just that initial initiating that the Father did to you, you know, getting yourself internally under control, that self under control relative to that initial spark, so that the self, it doesn't go out of control because the Father sparked it, okay? That's the process we're talking about. See, so it's external Father and internal Mother. You know, just like we're saying, as you're moving towards fusion, as you're moving in these psychic circles, or you're moving up those cosmic levels, that's a mother-like journey. Okay. Okay. So uncontrolled by mechanism. See, and then unidentified with spirit, this true spirit, this vertical spirit. And notice, I pointed out that we were going to get into this more, and it's starting to happen here first. You know, or right away here. Remember when we brought up that the self-identification, when we were going through those different self-hyphen, you know, that self-identification? This, the relationship of identification to personality is very, very important to kind of add to your growing understanding of personality and how this all works. Personality is not self-identifying. You have to choose to identify it. Okay. See, identified with spirit. You know, have you taken your volition and identified it? Or do you just have volition, unidentified volition, which means your purposing is going to be engaging spirit horizontally? And off you go into la-la land. Okay? Mm-hmm. Okay. You can't just purpose. You have to also find a point of identification for that that purposing and head towards it. You know, in this case, it's not, you can't just boom and you fuse. Okay, it's a process. That point of harmony that you're going, that, you know, is your first identification point that you're heading towards, is gotten to stably by going through levels of mother-likeness that are more and more focalized until they're as focalized as that which is wrapped right around the adjuster. Okay? So you're identifying through the mother-likeness to that point. You have to chart your purposing towards that point. If you don't chart the purposing, it's just going to go off in a random direction. Okay? And there's only one direction that's up. Every other direction is not up. Okay? The infinite number of other directions. You know, so what's the probability, you know, of just happening upon that one direction that's up? Pretty low probability if you don't know about this identification step. You must choose to go right with the cosmos. You know, you need to be right. Okay?
True purpose.
True. See? Not wrong. Yep.
Mm-hmm. In the book I'm writing on serotonin, dealing with obsessive compulsive disorder, the big issue that obsessive compulsive disorder is basically caused by low serotonin, which is tryptophan deficiency in essence, as well as some other nutritional cofactors.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, people who have OCD can't make decisions. So the lack of molecular nutrition or sustenance doesn't allow their brain to make proper decisions. And it's part of their syndrome.
There's a lot, yeah, see, there's a number of things that come into play. You know, when we talk about choices must be downstepped into decisions in the mind, spiritual choices downstepped into mental decisions. Well, think about how problematic this could be. Well, you know, what if, you know, there's a blender going in the mind on high? How difficult is it going to be to translate a spiritual choice down into a stable mental decision? You know, all the things that could be you're messing this up, either because you're grabbing a hold of the material end and doing something really perverse to it. You know, that mind that you're trying to, you know, bring a stable decision down into, you know, has two grip points. the spirit grip point at the top and the material grip point at the bottom. Okay, you could be twisting on the material end with all sorts of bizarre chemistry or whatnot and messing up the mind, making it just a completely unfertilizable domain. Or even more dangerous, you could be twisting on the spirit end. If you don't know that, before you do anything, you need to get this spirit end true. Get it right with the cosmos. It's fraught with difficulty. And the main thing that they're focusing on here is the spirit end. But the material end, there's a number of parallels, like we're pointing, this parallel between matter and spirit. There's a number of parallels that you can bring into about the material end too, and thinking about what we're starting to learn about how, notice what they, the chemical and electrical mechanics, like they mentioned there. There's a huge bunch of things there. Okay, it's not the main focus of what we're doing right here. It's the spirit end, but that is in play too. And and again, notice how there's a whole, this is a whole system. Everything is working together. The material's working with the, is sort of providing spiritual potential. And really point out, that the there's hormone issues, that are related to spirit. Again, it's so important. Let's say you do something to the mind that makes it more permeable to spirit energy. Does that mean that you're godlike then? Mm-hmm. Far from it. Mm-hmm. Now you've opened up the potential for danger. Mm-hmm. If that's all you've done, you haven't opened up the potential for goodness. If you haven't realized, if I bring this stuff in, I got to be ready. When I bring in spirit, I need to be ready to direct it upward toward God, toward my thought adjuster, or it's just going to randomly be directing my mind.
You just removed some mechanical limits, but you didn't do
it. Right, right. And this is where, if you go back, in that discussion we had back in paper 99, section 5, and section 6 there, remember how we were talking about in the hourglass, you start out with your feet firmly planted on the bottom. Okay, and at some point you've got to transit it, from a material gravity-founded, anchor to a spirit gravity-founded anchor. Okay, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about that transition, and we pointed out back then, you can't, that switch of anchors, there's no hierarchy of anchors. There's just two anchors. Two endpoints. You need to go from here to there. Okay? If you let go of here and don't purpose it 180 degrees, what's it gonna do? You're gonna float, you're gonna be horizontal, you're gonna go off in horizontal spirit space. Unanchored, very dangerous. Okay. Unstable. All right, so that whole bit, if it isn't identified with that upward character, danger, it's unstable. It's obviously unstable. It has no anchor. Obviously it's going to be unstable, just like any physical system. It's the fire hose, and you brought that up in that discussion. See, only God can hold the fire hose. He brought that up when we talked about it in paper 99. Here it is again. It's unstable. If you don't have God grab a hold of it, it's just going to be flapping. Remember, it's spirit energy. It's like a fire hose, okay? Very powerful. It's going to make that thing flap. It's not going to flow nice and smooth through that, it's unstable.
When you see various supposed religious manifestations where there's a lot of emotional stuff going on, where I think people think they're being energized by spirit, but it seems like it's emotion. Or in the more primitive things where people do this disassociation,
you're going horizontally. It's the level of feelings. It's that mere subjective spiritual energy, And, the more fantastical the experience, the farther you are from your adjuster, farther you are from the anchor point. It's the only way it can happen. There's nothing unstable, and bizarre about the adjuster. Okay? He's not flapping around. Okay? And close to him, it's not flapping very much. In order for it to flap a lot, you got to get away from the adjuster, okay, where it can go unstable. Okay, closer in you get, the more rock solid it is, like the Isle of Paradise. Okay? nothing metaphorical here. Literal. We're talking literally, this is the fact. Okay? Yep.
Chris, isn't this also like the last section? I think this is like crucial, the point on air and evil. You see, with the danger, that's dealing with.
Oh, yeah, right, right.
Air turns into evil.
Right, confusion goes to disruption, goes to destroying and destruction, yes. They're trying to clear up a potential point of confusion here, that somehow, it's going to be self-stabilizing. No, you have to choose to identify it with upward. That identification step, so important. Okay, now, and if, saying danger once wasn't enough, look at the next paragraph.
The great danger that besets the creature is that in achieving liberation from the fetters of the life mechanism, he will fail to compensate this loss of stability by affecting a harmonious working liaison with spirit. Creature choice, when relatively liberated from mechanical stability, may attempt further self-liberation independent of greater spirit identification.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right, so not just dangerous. Like I said, they're trying to bring this to a crescendo. And I'll say it again. I think everyone here probably remember danger. We're only using the word danger in its true root meaning, mm-hmm. where danger has the same root as domination. They're the same root word. Okay, the great danger that besets the creature. The great potential for domination that besets the creature. Okay. See, is that unidentified spirit is going to dominate your mind. You do not want that. Okay. If you need any, further prodding towards how much you don't want that, look at how that. What are you thinking when they may attempt further self-liberation? Independent of greater spirit identification. Okay? So before we go off to the obvious point there, think about it technically. This consecration of will, but not to the perfect will of the Father, but to the furtherance of all this cool stuff that yourself is starting to experience. Okay? this consecration to self, self-righteousness, okay, not God-righteousness. Do you take your initial consecration of will that, leads to a liberation, and then do you spend the time it takes to firmly anchor that in the cosmos, get your mind wrapped around that? No, you're impatient. It's like, spark it again. Spark it again. See, attempt further self-liberation. Will. You want to exercise the will more and more and more and more. But you're sure that's fine because, the will comes from God, so it's, whatever I do with it is innately divine, right? Let's just will it all, okay?
Will this.
No.
Will do that.
No. You can't, every measure of will has to have a coordinate, not independent, but dependent, spirit identification. Okay, you initiate it, and then you consecrate your mind to the harmony of the cosmos that's commensurate with that initiation. Okay? Get it pointed towards the adjuster through the mother. See, and notice here, affecting a harmonious, see again, the word harmony. The father is innate unity. The mother is harmony. There has to be parts brought into coordination for there to be a harmony. Okay? It's not innate unity. It's harmony. Father, mother. See, again, all the words are there. Just notice the words. It's not a father-like working liaison with spirit. It's a mother-like working liaison with spirit they're talking about here because it's harmonious. Okay?
So the final consecration...
It's a follow-on consecration. You know, you do it in pairs. Will and, you know, and then mind. Will and then mind. Will and then mind.
It's a focus on consecrating your will to the thought adjuster.
Consecrating your mind to the thought adjuster.
Right.
Getting your mind to go towards the thought adjuster.
The angels on the mansion world are very adept at this. They know that there were fire hoses coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And their first order of business is to help us direct that fire hose and reattach it to where it needs to be reattached. Mm-hmm. And probably a lot of people, especially since we just lost the boat anchor, that are doing exactly what they're saying here. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I can go off this way and that way and the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And the angels are gathering them like a bunch of cats. Deal with it.
And the only thing that can't, you know, overrule is if you choose to go off on a tangent. You know, they can't help you. You'll have all the help that you could ever need, but you can still utterly reject it. You know, and also just one other point before we get back, just on that. You know, and remember, at the point of fusion, you've brought just the first little measure. You know, wrapped around the adjuster. You've got everything else from here, from there to eternity still to wrap around. You know, you don't even have the basics wrapped around the adjuster till you leave the local universe. You got a long process ahead of you of trying to actualize this consecration of mind. You know, the consecration of mind is a definitive temporal process. Consecration of will, just like that. Turn your life around on a dime, you know, relative to the Father. But there is no such process with the, you know, with the relationship to the mother and the will and nearness to the adjuster. It always takes time, lots of time, and lots of concentrated effort. Yep.
So with the circle progress.
Mm-hmm.
Does that embody stabilization and the identification?
Right. Yeah, I mean...
So true circle making is both.
Yeah.
It's
cosmic. Yeah. Yeah, and you notice of, you know, augmented universe insight, you know, your three cosmic intuition eyes get open wider and wider, and increased cosmic comprehension. You actually start to, you know, not only have insight, but understanding. You know, especially when you finally have mode of consciousness, you know, on the cosmic comprehension.
Safely unfettered.
It's a process. So may attempt further self-liberation independent of greater spirit identification. You know, we all know that when you go back to paper 54, section 1, true and false liberty, let's read that first paragraph again. Of all the perplexing problems growing out of the Lucifer rebellion, none has occasioned more difficulty than the failure of immature evolutionary mortals to distinguish between true and false liberty.
Right.
Paper 54, section 1, first paragraph. They're foreshadowing it right there. You know, and they're going to get into it directly as we move on. Okay, you know, this issue, of identifying, you know, basically with the God of Liberty, quote unquote, you know, Lucifer. Are you going to attempt further self-liberation independent of greater spirit identification? Mm-hmm. Then you're on his path.
Crash course.
Okay? You're on his path. It's not just dangerous and unstable. The great danger that besets, okay? The full measure of danger is in play. They're trying to point this out.
Great domination.
Yep.
And when Michael comes with all of his teachings, he's helping us get more firm in our decisions and be grasped and grounded with spirit. That's the nature of the bestowal.
The spirit of truth allows for the universal bestowal of thought adjusters. So everyone can have this rock solid literal point, substance point of harmony in their mind. The harmony couldn't be made more concrete than that. For you to miss the harmony now, you got to truly be blind. Okay, that is your objective point. Go for that harmony. Seek that harmony. Make your mind harmonious, like that point of harmony in your mind. He came to give us everything that we could ever need to achieve this. Okay, but no matter how many gifts we're given, our will is still absolute. We can still absolutely reject an infinite number of gifts. Okay, so you know, that hasn't changed just because of the fourth epical revelation.
It seems to me having a really close relationship with Michael can kind of keep you from going way off.
If you're uncertain about which direction is up, take Michael's hand.
Yeah.
He will show you the way.
He's okay. Kind of like a safeguard. If
but, we have a relationship. But that spirit of truth is almost wholly limited by your will. If you don't choose that, you know, you might as well not even have a spirit of truth. You have to choose, you know, you have to choose to be led to the vertical. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
You know, that they say the greatest affliction of the cosmos is never to have been afflicted.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think of someone down on the stability of the material level, for them to make that transition to the other anchor point of spirit identification, they have to be motivated. They're not going to do it if everything's happy down on this level, mm-hmm. all the food is provided, all the luxuries, they'll just go horizontal until they run out of time.
So why has the book come to us now? Why aren't we in the same old mode where you didn't need the fifth epical revelation? You could, you know, God could count on the material stability to be adequately in place to keep civilization stable. Okay? The mother is moving on. Okay? There's evolution. Okay? And we are moving, we're moving out of the sheltered bays. Okay? The evolution of mind is beginning to, you know, lift all vessels up. Okay? Together. The mother is up slowly with time, is uplifting the whole thing. So without any choice on your part, you're beginning to be part of a human phenomenon that transcends some of those limitations. Mm-hmm. It's time to be, you know, we've talked about this. The Revelation is here to tell us, okay, this is happening, people. It's not going to stop. It's going to continue to rise. You must begin to choose over control within, because it's lifting you up over the dikes that the Father built. It is just happening. You can't stop it. You have to start choosing to replace some of that over that control that is being evolved up above. You know, that we're being evolved up above with internal over control.
I was speaking with someone a week ago, Friday before at lunchtime before the group. He's my age, and you know, he was talking about, you know, the complexity of the world is just starting to get overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's an intelligent person. But he's just, his natural reaction is to pull away from it. And I encouraged him to seek spirit, you know, identification, to rise above it and get a better perspective on high to be able to manage it, you know. Because I've already tried that myself. You can't pull away from it.
Just hits, you know, just keep on coming.
That's right. Bills keep on coming. Police come.
Hits just keep on coming.
You have to turn your ship straight into it.
Yeah.
You have to
it.
You got to face it head on. Face
the facts. Yeah.
Right.
Works best.
With a hammer again and paper 110, section 6.
Right. And, you know, the individual danger is one thing. Okay. We're going to get to civilization here, like I said. Like we said, the fifth epic of Revelation is a lot more than about a lot more than you and your stability. It's about civilization's stability.
Yeah.
Okay.
The whole principle of biologic evolution makes it impossible for primitive man to appear on the inhabited worlds with any large endowment of self-restraint. Therefore, does the same creative design which purposed evolution likewise provide those external restraints of time and space, hunger and fear, which effectively circumscribe the sub-spiritual choice range of such uncultured creatures? As man's mind successfully overstrides increasingly difficult barriers, the same creative design has also provided for the slow accumulation of the racial heritage of painfully garnered experiential wisdom. In other words, for the maintenance of a balance between the diminishing external restraints and the augmenting internal restraints.
Okay, that painfully garnered. We've talked about this, you know, pain and suffering are essential to progressive evolution. And in those early stages of progressing civilization, they're very evident. The four indispensables are cattle prods, you know, lots of pain, slavery, or war, slavery, social classes and profit motive, lead to all kinds of problems. So that's obviously, you think of that. Okay, but just like I was saying, we're moving out of that stage. You have to impose the four indispensables of advancing civilization upon yourself. You know, it's not the external is going away. You need to have true religion, true monogamy, prayer, and God consciousness. Okay, now, up there at the beginning, the whole principle of biologic evolution makes it impossible for primitive man to appear on the inhabited worlds with any large endowment of self-restraint. Okay, technically, what are they talking about there? What's that basic potential that's put into living things because of the design and because of the addition of life animation? Variability. Life has variability. It has to, or it can't evolve. Mm-hmm. It has to have variability, or evolution is impossible. Okay? The whole principle of biological evolution, you have variability. So obviously, you're not going to have a lot of self-restraint. Mm-hmm. You're designed, with a lot of variability. You're part of evolution. Okay? If you were designed with lots of, automatic restraint, you wouldn't have the variability, it couldn't evolve. Okay? Evolution fundamentally means that you don't have a large endowment of self-restraint. Just built in. You have to choose to control the self. And then, is this not really cool and illuminating? Mm-hmm. What's the title of this paper? Supreme and Ultimate Time and Space. Mm-hmm. Look at the parallel of understanding they've given you. Time and space, hunger and fear. Okay? How do time and space literally manifest as restraint? Yeah? Hunger. You can only go a certain length of time and then you're hungry.
Without eating,
The temporal character of hunger. Okay? And fear, you know, the cold depths of space where no one can hear you scream. You know, everyone, we love invoking that fear, you know, of imagining the walls disappearing and you're lost in an inky blackness of space. Okay? Do you see the parallel between space and fear? Okay?
Yeah.
Time and hunger, space and fear. Okay? And even when we talk, you know, think in the hourglass, you know, in that floor of the lower part of the hourglass, you know, it's a floor. It has, you know, has an extent, a spatial extent. We, in our visualization, that's the level of fear. See? It's space-like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You know, even there, you know, it works. Okay, so that's just a really great parallel to keep in mind. Time and space, hunger and fear. This slow accumulation of the racial heritage of painfully garnered, you know, experiential wisdom, you know, can you take up the challenge to to augment that with recognition of personal responsibility and the imposition of self-control. Because all of that very, very non-individual, you know, environmental, basically, you know, racial help in this regard is running out of gas. Okay? It's not going to be up to the challenge of the high seas. It can handle the sheltered bays, but it can't handle the high seas.
It's almost like grace running out at age 20.
Yeah, it's a lot like that. Yeah. You've got to start choosing to reinforce that.
Yeah. Well, it's also fear is the beginning of wisdom.
Yeah. To reinforce that, that's what we're moving out of, you know. We're moving out as a civilization. We're moving out of that initial period of grace. Now, you may not think of slavery, war, social classes, and profit motive as grace, but they are. That's, you know, hunger and fear is grace, but they are. You know, they're the hedged about with restraints, you know, and limitations for your safety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get hungry. You know, before, I mean, just. I mean, imagine if you didn't get hungry.
Just keep going.
you're zealous.
Yeah.
Okay, how dangerous is that for civilization?
Jeez,
someone could just go and go and go on that zeal.
Not eating, drinking.
But eventually, you know, you got to stop. No matter how zealous you are, you got to stop because you're starving.
And sleep.
See the grace of that for civilization? Okay? Or you know, you want to, you know, apply that zeal to everything. You start, you know, spreading yourself out.
Everything
then
I
you
do.
Start to get a little fearful because you're kind of getting outside of your, you know, experiential boundaries. You know, and so you back off. You know, you dial it back a little bit. So fear and hunger are restraints on zeal.
It's a great restraint on war machines is hunger.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone who's ever studied war knows that that's. The biggest limitation to absolute militarism, hunger. The soldiers get hungry. Yeah. 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 You got a little something, Jason?
Yeah, restraint. It sounds like we're talking about liberty again.
We're talking about restraints on liberty, yes. Because unbridled liberty is ruination. For you and everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Lucifer rebellion. Liberty must be restrained. And if you don't restrain it, it will be restrained by others, like the Father. And if the material restraints aren't enough, well then guess what? The Father will go into personal mode, you know, if he has to restrain. The Most High's rule in the kingdoms of men. You know, if you do not restrain yourself, you will be restrained one way or another, materially or personally, by the Father. Okay, that's what we're talking about here. And that's what leads to this next paragraph. This is kind of the high point here that is really tempting to take everything that you've learned and bring it to a climax point of recognition of how this relates to where we are as a society. Where the great fallacy is that's putting civilization in danger. And no matter how much spiritual candy we've wrapped around it, how much we've identified with it, we need to recognize it for what it is, a great danger. It has to be brought right out and called what it is. And that's what we're going to do here. So let's read that next paragraph.
The slowness of evolution, of human cultural progress, testifies to the effectiveness of that brake, material inertia, which so efficiently operates to retard dangerous velocities of progress. Thus does time itself cushion and distribute the otherwise lethal results of premature escape from the next encompassing barriers to human action. For when culture advances over fast, when material achievement outruns the evolution of worship wisdom, then does civilization contain within itself the seeds of retrogression, and unless buttressed by the swift augmentation of experiential wisdom, such human societies will recede from high but premature levels of attainment, and the dark ages of the interregnum of wisdom will bear witness to the inexorable restoration of the imbalance between self-liberty and self-control.
Okay, so just that last point, let me touch on that last point first, yeah, the point I was making. You know, if you don't control yourself, yourself will be controlled. The imbalance will be restored. You know, inexorable restoration. Nothing is going to stop it. You will be controlled. Okay? It's inexorable. Okay. So, look at the very beginning there. The slowness of evolution of human cultural progress. Okay. Progress is the difficult issue. The more spiritually conscious you become, the more the word progress dawns in your mind. It's like, we could actually make progress. I hadn't thought of that. You know, humans went for hundreds of thousands of years, and the notion of progress never even entered their mind. You know, they lived this very machine-like existence of, you know, if anything, they created an immutable divinity to the absence of progress. Their whole civilization is predicated on the divinity of stasis.
Quakers.
Okay. The moment that you begin to have, you know, and see the fourth epical revelation and the pouring out of the Spirit of Truth and thought adjusters, you know, began to awaken this, a spiritual uplifting. Okay, more and more the notion of progress has entered the human consciousness, at least in the leading, you know, edge of mankind. Okay, and herein lies the rub. Okay, like we were just pointing out. Because progress, true progress, is evolutional. Okay. Even when we've got a whole bunch of people who've recognized that evolution is related to biology, they don't recognize the universality of evolution. Not just matter, not just life, but mind and spirit is all evolutional. True progress is evolutional. If it's not evolutional, it's false progress, and it's dangerous. Okay, so you awaken your consciousness to progress, and your spiritual consciousness is impatient and wants progress now. Okay, even in the midst of having it revealed to you that true progress is evolutional, you're going to feel an internal tension with that. Mm-hmm. You're going to go, no, I'm not going to wait for it to evolve. I'm going to institute it by fiat. Okay? I'm going to take my zeal and I'm going to apply it to the idea of progress. What am I going to get? I'm going to get an ideology that has a name. I'm going to get progressivism. Okay? There are a select few isms that are pulled out of the, you know, the menagerie of isms. Secularism, humanism, positivism, progressivism. Okay. True progress, to be an alignment with true progress, to be a true progressive, is fine. Identification with spirit, vertical relationship, okay? But ism, that's the problem, okay? Now, if there were actual true progressives, we wouldn't have a problem. But we don't have true progressives. We have progressivists. We have those who have identified with an ism, okay? Progressivism is extremely problematic, okay, for civilization. That's what they're trying to get at here. Then does civilization contain within itself the seeds of retrogression? See, this is always the irony of these, you know. You take the notion of positive and you turn it into an ism, and, you know, positivists are actually negativists, you know. They don't recognize that. You know, they think they're positive. You know, well, progress is positive, but if you make it an ism, it becomes, it doesn't become, right, progressive. It becomes retrogressive, okay? Because you know, like I was saying, you know, if you don't know about this identification and you haven't really taken the time to reflect and become connected to the cosmos and get that, you know, point true, that identification point true, no matter how much you want it to be true, it's not going to be. It's going to be false. It's going to be randomly in one of these non-true directions. Okay. Yeah, this is a phenomenon that was just beginning to build when the revelation was given to us. It's one of the reasons why the revelation was given to us. You know, the notion of progressivism was beginning to take hold, and it has been growing for 100 years now. And it's reached the point of really, really danger for civilization. The potential for an interregnum is upon us. If we don't, notice what they say, you know, unless it is buttressed by the swift augmentation of experiential wisdom, okay? Unless we recognize that of all the isms for civilization, this one is really, really dicey, and immediately have the wisdom to engage this and expunge this, we've got serious problems ahead of us. At best, it's just going to be an interregnum of, you know, a dark ages. At best, it's going to be that. Okay. We all know what's at the other end of the spectrum. That's the angels of the trumpets. So you know, this is one thing that needs to be made very clear. Everyone has to get this clear in their mind. You have to see progressivism for the fallacy that it is. It's a seductive sophistry because it has right in the label. It's got the word progress. It's like, well, progress is good. My personality says that foresight and progress, that's all good. Yeah, but not, you know, when there's no identification. No one has taken this identification step before they've started willing things. Okay, we have random willing. Okay, and we have no notion that all true progress is evolutional. It must be spread out over time. It cannot be done by fiat.
Give us an example of what you're saying about progressivism. What exactly are people forcing?
Let's finish. If there was a little time left, I was going to go off into some details. Let's see if we can finish this first, and then we'll come back to that.
The stakes here are huge when they talk about the Dark Ages and the interregnum period, unless what? A swift intervention of experiential wisdom. Well, that seems like such a tall order. Imagine, for example,
well, the potential, it's not...
People try to solve their problems, and all of a sudden, they have to get swiftly, experientially wise. Okay, that suggests to me, one point here is maybe this is the swift intervention of experiential...
Part of it. Mm-hmm. It's at least an attention step toward it. But we're talking about experiential wisdom, okay? Unless you're hitting yourself on the head with this, it's not, okay.
Experience with the
We know that we're quivering on the very brink of the dawning of wisdom in a collective. Mm-hmm. Okay, at least those who choose to, recognize that and take on that. You could say, well, it looks like we're just hosed here. No, because what we're going to need is coming on. We're quivering on the very brink of having, the spirit of wisdom dawning in the collective. Okay, so basically the system will be potentialized. And if we choose, there can be a swift augmentation of wisdom. Okay, right now, I might choose, but... I can't round up a bunch of wisdom. I don't have it there in front of me. I will have it there in front of me. So if I choose, we can bring the wisdom into play. But we've got to know that has to be done, so that we can do it.
Yeah. Second last paper of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Without God, neither freedom and liberty, nor property and wealth will lead to peace.
Right. And again, the big thing we're focusing on here is the liberty part of that. I mean, of all the problems, see, none of them are more dangerous than get the notion of liberty in your head without personal responsibility and self-control. False liberty, this whole notion of, let's just throw off the shackles and progress, okay? Progress out of those shackles, everything will just be fine. That's all you have to do is just cast off the shackles. No, you're going to get just the opposite. You're not going to get progression. You're going to get retrogression. Because you're not going upward. You're going outward. You're going thin out, away from the anchor point. It gets spread thinner and thinner, and it breaks. Okay, civilization collapses if you try to go sideways with it. Okay. That's what they're talking about here. And just this, look at this next little paragraph. See how they, it's not like we're just randomly talking about Lucifer. This is what we're talking about.
The iniquity of Caligastia was the bypassing of the time governor of progressive human liberation, the gratuitous destruction of restraining barriers. Barriers which the mortal minds of those times had not experientially overridden.
And the same is true today. Okay? The iniquity of Caligastia. Okay, strongest word they could put. Okay? Is what? Mm-hmm. Okay, that should... Okay, it's nothing like humans have ever thought about in the iniquity of the devil. Okay? The iniquity of Caligastia was... the bypassing of the time governor of progressive human liberation. That's what progressivism is all about. The ism part, the zeal for progress. Okay? Screw the time governor,
mm-hmm.
is the battle cry.
Progress at all costs.
Yes. Liberation. Okay?
Slaves didn't like that.
This is you're falling right in to the Lucifer rebellion. That thought. That's why they have the word great in front of the word danger. The full measure of the Lucifer rebellion is in play when you go down that path.
Well, I don't get what they're talking about.
I'll get you. Yeah, just.
Are we talking about giving dishwashers to all the people in Hudson,
Africa? No. We're not talking about progress. We're not talking about altruism. We're talking about progressivism. We'll get to this. It's not like the word progressive is bad. See, it's the problem is that someone who's actually is a progressivist thinking they're a progressive. They're not a progressive, they're a progressivist. Okay? And we'll talk about that zeal here in just a second.
I remember some years ago, some person that seemed wise wrote that there were going to be problems with Russia, with the Soviet Union, when they rather suddenly gave up all the controls that the socialist system had imposed, and that if they tried to go suddenly, quickly, too quickly into more democratic means, that this would be very disruptive. People wouldn't know how to handle it. And I think you can see evidence of that.
And is it just in that instance? No, they're trying to. It's a universal thing. Okay. You know, even the angels of progress foster evolutional progress. Go back and read the little paragraph, you know, with the angels of progress. They don't foster just progress, especially not progressivism. They foster evolutional progress. You know, progress that's synchronized with, you know, mind identification, you know, with the harmony of the cosmos. Slow and sure, grounded, stable. Okay. A little more here.
That mind which can effect a partial abridgment of time and space by this very act proves itself possessed of the seeds of wisdom which can effectively serve in lieu of the transcended barrier of restraint.
So in between a Caligashi and a Lucifer paragraph, they gave you a little breather. So it's not all dark. You know, right. It's like, okay, this sounds really, really grim. There's a little, they give you a little paragraph of light. Okay, in between the two paragraphs of darkness there, okay? Just reminding you to think logically about this. You know, if you have, you know, enough character to abridge, you know, hunger and fear, time and space, see? If you can abridge hunger and fear to a certain degree, then you have the potential, you know, to take care of the stability part. If you have this much objectivity to overcome that much hunger and fear, you have that much objectivity to choose to be stable within. Okay. So, I mean, the two go hand in hand, the positive and the negative, but that's what we've always pointed out. You know, the moment that you expand the capacity, it's a double-edged sword. So you've got to choose the capacity to be oriented upward. Otherwise the other side of the blade is going to cut you. The negative side of the blade will cut you. But don't ever forget that, you know, don't think that all there is the dark side. There's the light side too. It's there, but you have to choose it. It's not going to happen automatically. Okay, look at the next one here.
Lucifer similarly sought to disrupt the time governor, operating restraint of the premature attainment of certain liberties in the local system. A local system settled in light and life has experientially achieved those viewpoints and insights which make feasible the operation of many techniques that would be disruptive and destructive in the pre-settled eras of that very realm.
Okay, so just, you know, that which was on earth was on high. Same thing, you know, this impatience of spirit, mere spiritual consciousness. It wants progress, and it wants it now. It wants it by fiat. You should have noticed a word there, or actually a couple words. You know, right at the beginning, Lucifer similarly sought to disrupt. Okay, mm-hmm. Is that attached to error? What word is that?
Evil.
Yes. Right. Error, self-confusing. Evil, self-disrupting. See. Mm-hmm. So disrupt the time governor, that's evil. Okay, and then look at disruptive and destructive. Ah, evil and sin. See, mm-hmm. Like I told you, remember those four words. You know, self-confusing, self-disrupting, self-destroying, and self-destruction. Evil, error, evil, sin, and iniquity. They're going to use them, see, and they're already using them. They're expecting you to notice that, see. Okay, so... You know, take a breather from all that heavy duty, all the danger. Let's read these last two paragraphs. And see ourselves in a true light. It doesn't have to be dark like that.
As man shakes off the shackles of fear, as he bridges continents and oceans with his machines, generations and centuries with his records, he must substitute for each transcended restraint a new and voluntarily assumed restraint in accordance with the moral dictates of expanding human wisdom. These self-imposed restraints are at once the most powerful and the most tenuous of all the factors of human civilization, concepts of justice and ideals of brotherhood. Man even qualifies himself for the restraining garments of mercy when he dares to love his fellow men, while he achieves the beginnings of spiritual brotherhood when he elects to mete out to them that treatment which he himself would be accorded, even that treatment which he conceives that God would accord them.
Just one little thing, the noise in passing. Again, they're so cool the way they do this. In the midst of that poetry, there's this neat little technical thing in there, too. You should have maybe gotten a little sense toward the end there about the levels of meaning. You know, you saw the word mercy and love, and so you're thinking the fifth and sixth levels of meaning, perhaps. Remember how I pointed out they were kind of, alluding to these cosmic expressions? You know, you go back there to the true and false liberty, and you find the facets of self-control and the facets of personal responsibility back there in that section. And we created this little handout to show three examples of the facets. Okay, concepts of justice. Okay, that's this first one. You know, in the midst of the facets of self-control, one of those facets is material justice. And then the ideals of brotherhood, one of the facets here in personal responsibility is universe fraternity. That's just a brotherhood. And then it goes on and even talks about the garments of mercy. Well, guess what? You know, this one's the facets of true mercy. Now, why on earth would I actually have had, I didn't try to make them in the same order as here. What order did I put them in here? I put them in backward order. If I start from here and I look backward in the book, I'll hit this one first, that one second, and that one third as I look backward into the book. This sentence is doing the same thing. It's in the same order because they're literally encouraging you to look backward, in the book. And so you get them in that order. That's how cool they've constructed this. Okay, but see, they're invoking the levels of meaning and their relationship with these cosmic facets. What does it look like when you have this mother likeness that gives you this stability and takes danger out of play? It looks like this. Go back and review those facets of cosmic expression, and identify yourself with a point in your mind that you can tell moves towards this character. That point is the adjuster. You won't see it as the adjuster initially. The adjuster is far off initially. But you'll see the foreshadowing of the adjuster because you'll begin to see these facets of mother-like character. That are going to move you towards the adjuster. So I just had to point that out, that it's just, you never want to let up on noticing the little details. They're always woven into the poetry like that, very precise.
An automatic universe reaction is stable and in some form continuing in the cosmos. A personality who knows God and desires to do his will, who has spirit insight, is divinely stable and eternally existent. Man's great universe adventure consists in the transit of his mortal mind from the stability of mechanical statics to the divinity of spiritual dynamics. And he achieves this transformation by the force and constancy of his own personality decisions, in each of life's situations declaring, "It is my will that your will be done."
And just so you didn't get totally in the way, notice it's personality decision. See the mind? There's the will, personality, and the mind, the decisions. The two together. Factor. Okay? Twofold consecration. And look at the direct invocation of our hourglass picture. The transit of his mortal mind from the stability of mechanical statics to the divinity of spiritual dynamics. Flipping the anchor point, transiting the anchor point from the bottom to the top, grounded in with material gravity in fear, and statics of that, or grounded by spiritual gravity in the cosmos.
Chris, is that also the goal for a civilization?
Yes, it's the same thing. From early progressing civilization to advancing civilization. You know, true religion, true monogamy, prayer, God consciousness, those are indispensable to a right transit of civilization from this orientation to this. Yes. Okay, let's take a little time. I was thinking there might be, you know, that very question. I thought, well, if we have time, you know, we could talk about this just a little bit more. So let's do that. We brought this up way back when we were in paper 86. There's a paragraph, it's one paragraph in the book, where they point to the specifics of what we're talking about. Why is it that there's such danger inherent in progressivism? I mean, it doesn't start out in its full-blown, you know, self-destruction. It starts out with confusion. So what? You know, so you'd think, well, there must be some point in the book where they clarify that initial point of confusion, where they clarify what the fallacy is, what the error is that starts this process. You know, what's the fundamental assumption behind progressivism, the error that can lead to much worse? In the last section of paper 86, the function of primitive religion, and this of course is interesting if you think about paper 99, section 5 and 6 that we were invoking. That the whole point there was about, you know, the role of religion in stabilizing. Okay, so here again is another section about the function of primitive religion, the same stabilizing thing. So not coincidentally, sure enough, that's where this paragraph is, in a logical place in the book. The paragraph is the third from the last one there, or the one, you know, the fourth one in the section. Modern civilized races are just emerging from ghost fear as an explanation of luck and the commonplace inequalities of existence. Ah, we're transcending one of these fear things. You know, there's a liberation from some fear. And that's what we're talking about. Mankind is achieving emancipation from the bondage of the ghost spirit explanation of ill luck. But while men are giving up the erroneous doctrine of a spirit cause of the vicissitudes of life, they exhibit a surprising willingness to accept an almost equally fallacious teaching. Okay, this is the error, which bids them attribute all human inequalities to political misadaptation, social injustice, and industrial competition. This is the dawning point of confusion, the error. This is the fundamental assumption of progressivism. But new legislation, increasing philanthropy, and more industrial reorganization, however good in and of themselves, will not remedy the facts of birth and the accidents of living. Only comprehension of facts and wise manipulation within the laws of nature will enable man to get what he wants and to avoid what he does not want. Scientific knowledge leading to scientific action is the only antidote for so-called accidental ills. Okay. In other words, political misadaptation, social injustice, and industrial competition are not the cause, the source of the problem. It's genetics and lack of scientific understanding to master the material world. Okay, and of course, the facts of birth, you know, we can thank the rebellion and the fall for a lot of that, of course. You know, that's why we got such problematic facts of birth. You know, there's the human inequalities an awful lot to do with just that. Okay, and so back when we read that, I put a little reflective paragraph together. You know, and this is, you know, on the website, there's this thing called, I have political fallacy, is this little blurb that just has that paragraph. And then the following little reflection. Who has not heard a politician claim that some human inequality is caused by political misadaptation, which can be corrected by enacting new legislation? Who has not heard a politician claim that some human inequality is caused by social injustice, which can be corrected by imposing increasing philanthropy? Who has not heard a politician claim that some human inequality is caused by industrial competition, which can be corrected by forcing more industrial reorganization? Okay. It's ubiquitous. It has nothing to do with left and right. If you think about it clearly, it's on both sides. Okay? As we argue over left and right, there's been this descent on both sides into progressivism. Okay? The fallacy, this threefold fallacy, you know, that we're trying to somehow cure human inequalities with these false initial assumptions. Okay? And the more they don't work, the more the ISM becomes capital I, capital S, capital M, the more zeal you pour into it. You know, in a further attempt to try to somehow, it's like, I know, you know, that has to do with progress, so I have to be just more zealous and more fiat about my, you know, forcing change. Remember what they say. That's in paper 100, I think, yeah. Change without growth is potential evil. Again, that's what we're talking about here. Okay? That's the problem with progressivism. It's not evolutional. It's change without growth. You just... You know, like I was, you know, pointing out there, you're enacting, you know, and imposing and forcing, the three verbs I used there, those three things, change without growth. Well, that's potential evil. Okay, why potential evil? Well, it starts out with error. It's just error to start with. These are fallacies. You know, notice they said fallacies. Okay, it starts out as just error. But it's potential evil because it won't stop there. You're going to start to put more and more will into it. You know, how did they word that? That you will attempt. See, where was that? What may attempt further self-liberation, independent of greater spirit identification. Yeah, that's the problem. That's what takes it from error to evil. You know. And the abyss of civilization, the interregnum, it'll break. It's going to break. Yeah.
Well, I would like to make the comment that I am here to read your answer, but I'm not here to talk. I'm here to listen to you, Chris. I'm not here to say. But I just want to say this because I feel like we're kind of related. So there's this thing with animals where they do something called superovulation, where they take they put hormone in a superior cow and they cause it to create eggs. They take the eggs from the superior cow, they fertilize them in a superior bull, and they implant them in the inferior cows. So the inferior cows don't get to breed, only the superior cow breeds, but she's breeding through artificial chemicals. They've linked that to Alzheimer's and dementia. The animals that we're eating are causing us problems. So is that progressive?
Well, I mean, you can see, you know, it's obvious why you thought of that. Right, I mean, the parallel is obvious. I mean, everything is evolutional if it's true.
See? Okay, that's fine.
See, you have to think in time about these things. You can't think like you're a creator being and can do things by fiat. You know, notice how there's this growing tendency to think like we're creators. So we start to get worried about climate change. And immediately we start thinking, well, you know, we need to engineer the earth. Let's do some grand earth, you know, global engineering project and alter the atmosphere or something. Okay, does that sound evolutional to you? Does that sound like unintended consequences? I mean, you've got the best of intentions, okay, and you know, and notice, you know, the qualification back there with, you know, that where it says, however good in and of themselves. Now that line that I read there in that paragraph. I mean, you know, you may, you know, you obviously need, you're going to need legislation, industrial organization, and stuff like this. Okay, I mean, there's some, you know, just in and of themselves. Okay, you're going to have to, you know, you'd like to clear up the pollution in the atmosphere just in and of itself, but you got to think wisely about this. Okay, you know, are you, you know, because as soon as you think apart from evolution, apart from relationship to God the Mother. By definition, it's going to go really, really poorly. Okay, it can't. She's not going to uphold a non-evolutional act by a non-creator being. Okay, she will uphold a non-evolutional act by a creator being. She's not going to uphold our, you know, supposed, you know, creator-like acts. That, you know,
they're not true.
They will fail. You know, notice that, does it say that such human societies may recede from high but premature levels of attainment? No, it says such human societies will recede because they're not upheld. They, you know, it's a foregone conclusion that if we continue down this road, we will recede. You know, and the inexorable restoration of the imbalance between self-liberty and self-control will be imposed.
And when we're pursuing science is kind of a break on that, and putting reason into the system is a scientific method which always corroborates its findings with experiment, you know, back and forth and getting...
True scientific method is trying to do that, yeah.
And not just charting off with mathematics into the unbounded courses of space and then being a guru for the whole planet.
Right, and so, you know what I'm going to say right now. Whoa, that's not very encouraging because we know that we've thrown the true scientific method out. You know, more and more with each passing decade in science, we're throwing that out so that any truth in science is melting away. You know, and what are they just saying? That's the source, you know, what we're hoping for is to be able to deal with human inequalities. You know, you're not going to do it with false science. Okay? See, this is why it's all together. True religion, true philosophy, true science. You've got to have this all together. You know, and we're, you know, we've got isms like humanism and secularism and progressivism and positivism. You know, and positivism is directly tied into the science, you know, of the unraveling of science. You know, it's all leading to, you know, a lot of potential for an interregnum. Unless there is a, you know, and I want to just point out, you know, we often bring up the trumpets, but just notice, you know, that's not the point of this, you know, this paragraph just started with the material control, not the personal control, okay? I mean, you know, what they're pointing out here is they're going to reinstitute more hunger and more fear, and that will correct you. Okay, and you know this unbridled self-liberty that you humans are embracing, you know there's a quick and dirty solution to that. You're going to be hungry and fearful again, if you don't stop. Okay, you know, and if it gets too bad, you'll even be more than hungry and fearful. But you know, they're pointing out here that's probably what you'll get. You probably won't get the trumpet blast. You'll just get a dark ages again, where every day you wake up, and all day long. You're fearful and hungry, you know, until you get your head clear again. That's what they're saying.
We need to answer the question of what the heck is swift experiential wisdom?
It's swift because it's a zeal of faith, but not a zeal of belief. Zeals of belief are isms. Isms are the problem. You know, switch your zeal from a belief to a faith.
I can understand that as an individual, but as a society.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a, see, that,
it's a big, tall order.
Right. See, that's why I'm trying to point. That's why you got to think about these two things. You can imagine yourself, you know, going, whoa, let me pull back on the reins here and get this corrected. Okay. But we've been, this ball has been rolling for 100 years now. There's material inertia in society along this regard. This is very problematic for civilization. You know, you as an individual, you know, might have, you know, can weather the storm here and correct. But we need to face the facts that there needs to be a pretty good collective awakening here, because we got some serious inertia. Everyone is doing this without even thinking about it. Everyone just never even questions these assumptions now. They're just, you know, they're just a priori, you know, that, okay, you got.
Not only that this has to happen, but that this can happen, that you human beings have the possibility to do this buttressing.
Yes, you do. We're going to have the seventh adjutant, you know. We have the Arantia book. I mean, this is an emergency. This is the emergency we're talking about. It's a philosophical emergency. They've given us a treatise on cosmic philosophy. You know, if we conform to the revelation, okay, then we're not, you know, we can have a swift, okay, you know, correcting. But, you know, it's going to fall apart a lot quicker than that. But, you know, it just, but it's, you know, if we refuse to conform to the revelation, it's not very likely that, you know, we're going to escape.
Let's continue this.
Quick answer to James' question. I remember in the book, somewhere in this 86 area, paper 86, but it said it started off one of the sections that worship in the evolving human savage is initiated by the spirit of worship, which is the sixth attribute. The spirit of wisdom directs the spirit of worship upward.
Right. Well, it makes it, it actually...
Wisdom is inherently looking... It's taking worship and bringing it upward. Otherwise, we're worshiping rocks. We're worshiping, you know.
We're not going up. Yeah, and you know, really, you're not even sort of, it's not even really the spirit of worship. It's just the energy of zeal.
Right.
You know, until the spirit of wisdom, you know, brings the spirit down from above the mind. You know, the spirit of wisdom is the conduit which spirit can come down, you know, and transform all those energies into spirit of knowledge, spirit of, you know, etc. Okay, so we've got a couple more sections, but you know, spend some time reflecting on this, you know, and that passage back there, you know, and begin to be a seed. Try to begin to be a seed for some wisdom here. We all know that progress, true progress, is good, you know, and that's what we need to foster, the recognition of the difference between true and false progress. You just because you label it progress, it doesn't mean it's progress. Just because you label it spirit, it doesn't mean it's spirit. It's most likely just mind. You know, we know that you know, this theme has come up over and over again. This is the revelators have given us this this fifth epical revelation. So a handful of us can start to recognize it for what it is and begin to be a voice of wisdom in the midst of all this confusion. Before the confusion builds to irreparable states, where all of us, you know, will have to call upon great spiritual strength to endure the pain and suffering. Okay? You know, we can do it, but it sure would be nice. You know, if we could be seeds to help mankind not have to, you know, endure an interregnum again. Okay, let's take a moment to reflect.